literature and politics, romance and betrayal, celebration and mourning, not to mention plenty of vodka and cigarettes. It's all in a night's work for my next guests, Brian F. O'Byrne, Jennifer Ely, and Billy Crudup, who co-star in Tom Stoppard's The Coast of Utopia, a trilogy of plays following the fortunes of five Russian intellectuals in the 19th century. It's at Lincoln Center's Vivian Beaumont Theater through May 13th, and I'm pleased that it has brought Brian, Jennifer, and Billy to my show today. Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Hello. Thank you.
So how did each of you wind up joining the cast of The Coast of Utopia? Was there, did somebody call you, or did you hear rumors that it was going to be mounted in New York? Let's begin with you, Billy.
Jack called me, actually.
Jack O'Brien.
And he said, we had been trying to work together for some time, and he said that he was going to direct this trilogy, and would I be interested in playing Belinsky? And so it wasn't the kind of part that I'm offered so frequently, and it's the kind of part that I really adore. So apart from the fact that the entire enterprise was something really fascinating and worthwhile, the part was really exciting to me.
Well, you actually got your start in New York theater with a Stoppard play. So
yeah, well, there was all sort of sentimental reasons for me to want to do it. Lincoln Center was the place where I got my start with Arcadia, and working with Tom Stoppard, and it was, you know, a lovely confluence of circumstances that made it really exciting. In fact, they found the shirt that I wore in Arcadia, and I'm wearing it in this.
Ah, well, means you haven't gained any weight. That's pretty incredible. What about you, Jennifer?
It's a blousy shirt.
Well, I was when they did it in London 4 years ago, I guess it was, I was approached about doing the same parts that I'm doing here, but I didn't read them at the time. I didn't want to do any anything. Really.
And this is daunting.
It is. Well, it is, but I didn't even know that. I knew nothing. I didn't read them. I didn't even ask about them properly. They just said, would you like to do this? And I said, don't tell me any more about it, because I really don't want to do anything. So, and I knew if I read them that I would probably want to do them. So I didn't. And then this last late spring, I was rehearsing Macbeth, and just this huge package arrived at the Public, and that was the first I knew of it. And I just opened it and thought, no, there's no way I could be a good wife and mother and possibly do this. And it seemed like it would be like being on an offshore oil rig for 6 months, and it was daunting.
But isn't it like doing repertory to some degree, because you're playing three separate characters?
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like being in three different plays, even though they all involve similar characters.
Yes. Well, I've done rep before, but to do it with them all being tied to the same story, it's a whole different wonderful level.
Now, Brian, I don't even recognize you because you have long hair in the play.
Yeah,
and
I,
here you
I
are.
I don't even realize.
you have been doing a lot of Broadway recently.
Yeah.
You were in Doubt, and before that you played the most scary man I've seen.
Oh, you saw Frozen.
I did. So is this just part of this experience in New York?
Well, no, New York is home to me. It's been home for quite a long time. So, no, I the same as the rest of the people here, I got a phone call from Jack as well, just asking me. And I had actually picked up the scripts at the beginning of last year and opened the first one and started to read it and just couldn't make head nor tail. I was too busy with my hand on the index to see who all the characters were. And, oh, another person called Natalie, and another person who is Alexander.
It's like reading a Russian novel.
Yeah, it's very, very. I found it very, very difficult. But thankfully, you know, I got a call from Ethan. I'd known Ethan as well, and he was doing it. And there was such excitement about it. Actors don't get a chance to do anything like this. There's no way a writer is even going to write 8.5 hours of theater anymore, and no way a theater would even read such a thing. So a writer has to be completely on top of his game, Stoppard is on top of his game for quite a long time, but for this to exist is unique.
Well, you play the central figure of Alexander Herzen, whose memoirs form the basis of this story. Did you go back and read his writing?
Yeah, you know, I've, you know, obviously we all got a little list suggested reading, and I read his works, My Past and Thoughts, and also his books on. As beautiful as that is, I actually prefer his letters and his book called From the Other Shore and Letters from France and Italy, which I think are much more pertinent to what he believed in and are much more immediate. But we all read Romantic Exiles, and we read Isaiah Berlin's Russian Thinkers. I think it's different for a lot of us, is that we got an education as well, or certainly I needed. I was dumb to all of the.
Seems like the most modern of all the thinkers. He's the one we recognize the most as a 21st century.
Yeah.
But you even went to Russia with some of your cast.
Yeah, myself and Jason Butler Harner and Josh Hamilton and Martha Plimpton decided on the spur of a moment to go do extensive research in Russia a week.
That's really researching.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a week we couldn't discover anything, but it was quite wonderful to go over to. We went to Moscow and St. Petersburg, and I want to go back now.
Well, Billy, Tom Sparta said that he was inspired to write The Coast of Utopia after reading about the man you portray, Vissarion Belinsky. Is Belinsky an inspiring figure?
Well, he's certainly an interesting intellectual figure in the context of Russia at the time. He was not of the intellectual class. There was, you know, pretty distinct caste system at the time, and those that could afford to had the luxury to think and write and try to be progressive with their, you know, political ideology. And Belinsky was someone who kind of forced his way in by sheer force of will. And he was quite dynamic and very controversial and
consumptive
as well, yes.
A lot of coughing in this role.
Yeah, he is not well from beginning to end. That was sort of, he was, and that was one of the things that made him compelling, is he would drive himself with a kind of fanaticism that would leave him, you know, breathless and bloody at the end of an argument. And Herzen remarks that in Russian thinkers that was one of the things that he admired about him. He wished he could preserve that part of him that had so many ideals and were exposing such vulnerability, you know, with those ideals, while kind of tossing a part of him that was the part of him that was so detestable in a way too.
Actually, what was funny, it has been remarked by audience members after the first play with the early previews, because in this play, if somebody coughs on stage, it's not a good sign with consumption.
Right.
At time. You kind of know, well, this guy is not going to be around
people
for
think
too
it's
long.
Everybody's getting it.
Yes, it was remarked, an audience member was heard leaving the first play going that Billy had done a particularly good job considering that he was suffering from such a bad cold, and that obviously other members in the cast had picked up on it. So.
Well, we're not quite as familiar with consumption
no.
Today, so it doesn't mean quite the same thing.
Well, he was a reviewer, and I found myself wondering what he would write about The Coast of Utopia.
Well, he would probably write a different thing on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. He was notorious for changing his opinion based upon often emotional responses, and he was often quite wrong about the quality of the material that he was reviewing, but he was impassioned and quite insightful often, and would cut through a lot of the historical baloney that got in the way of everybody else.
I'm talking with Billy Crudup, Jennifer Ely, and Brian F. O'Byrne, three of the stars of Tom Stoppard's The Coast of Utopia, which is currently at the Vivian Beaumont Theater at Lincoln Center and running through May 13th, a momentous thing, an epic three-part play in which Jennifer Ely plays three women, as we kind of suggested earlier, Lyubov Bakunin, Natalie Herzen, and Malvida von Meisenberg.
Meisenbug, actually, believe it or not.
Meisenbug.
Meisenbug.
Oh, gee, I corrected it.
I know. I've seen that happen before.
And the first two women are romantics, but Malvida is almost severe at times. Do you think she has a secret crush on Hertzog?
Yes. Yes.
just wondered. You have to think about that.
Yeah, it takes some time to think about that.
Oh, no, she definitely does.
What do you think it was like to be a woman in the circle of men with such outsized ambitions?
Well, Malvida was actually an amazing woman, and I had to stop reading her memoirs, which are fascinating, because
she was with Nietzsche for a while, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. She was extraordinary. But I had to stop reading the memoirs because there was no place to put them in her function in the third play, and I was finding it frustrating to try to be who she was and with nowhere to put it. But I look forward to finishing reading them once the run has finished. Yeah, she was a very interesting lady. And lots of the wives were, Hinkle's wife was also fascinating. And she sort of just glances through the third play.
Well, that, to some degree, because that was the situation for women, no matter how smart at the time.
Well, I think that they didn't. Whatever they did has not proved to be indelible. So I don't know whether that was because it wasn't received to be so at the time, or because they really didn't do anything interesting. I know that they did. I mean, I know Malvida did all sorts of extraordinary things, but it's not what Tom was writing about.
I once had an actor tell me that costumes are a factor in defining the characters they play. So are period roles to some degree affected by what you're wearing?
In what way?
Well, you're wearing very different kind of clothing.
Yes.
Than you would be wearing if you were doing a modern play, and you're corseted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd imagine it even affects the way you stand at times.
It does. I don't wear a corset, actually, for Malvida, because I wanted to not be shaped in any way. I wanted her to be as straight up and down as possible. For Natalie, I wear quite a strict corset, and for Lubov, I wear hardly a corset, really. It's just there for kind of token, because I'm supposed to wear it, but it doesn't do anything to my body. So it's nice for me. I sort of have three different shapes for the three different characters. Of course you move differently. I mean, the dresses end up weighing probably, you know, 15 pounds, and you're running around in them, and you learn to get up and downstairs. Very well. It never seemed like I would learn to be able to get up those stairs, and now I can
without tripping on the hems.
Yes, and Jack showed us how you can go up the stairs by just using one hand to lift your skirts. You're not supposed to use two. And my mother has always, one of her pet peeves has been actresses lifting their skirts to go downstairs, because you never have to ever touch your skirt when you're going downstairs.
And then you have a scene where you don't wear a skirt, and Jack Jack O'Brien was here. He talked about the problems of staging that nude scene in the second play in Shipwreck.
It didn't seem to be a problem.
Well, he said it was theater in the round. He said, I had to protect Jennifer.
Yes. Well, it seemed the whole thing took about, I don't know, 2 minutes.
Oh,
I think
if less. Actually, Jennifer was remarkable in that. It's a tough thing to do. And we just showed up at rehearsals one day, and I kind of glanced to my right, and Jennifer was naked beside me. And it's a beautiful way to go to work, I must say. But
hope that stage isn't too drafty.
No, it's fine.
It's a beautiful picture as well, of course. It's an astonishing moment in the play.
It's based on that famous Manet
painting, yes. And also, it Jennifer in an odd way doesn't actually seem nude. She seems to be part of a painting, and it's so beautifully lit and designed. It's quite a beautiful moment. I wish I could see it, really, but I can't. I'm in it.
You're in the middle of the play, yeah. That scene. Tom Sabart has moved to New York to guide this production. Is it helpful to have the opportunity to work with a playwright as you develop a role, Billy?
Well, I have, you know, such affection for Tom based on my experience working with him in Arcadia. But working with him in Arcadia was often devastating, because my primary motivation was to please he and Trevor Nunn. You know, the idea of playing the role or, you know, learning about myself as an actor was really secondary. What I wanted to do was, you know, try to fit in. And so Tom treats everybody that's there as a contemporary. He treats people as artists who are working together and collaborating. And he is someone with, you know, a kind of often ruthless perception and vision, and he will come to you with it. And actors are, you know, notoriously fragile and vulnerable, and the places that you have to put yourself on stage repeatedly And the ways in which you have to become a character require such fortitude, you know, that when you're spoken to that way, if you're unprepared, it can be really disheartening and challenging. But having had that experience, the chance of working with Tom under these circumstances was so illuminating and exciting for me, because I could really take what he was saying without taking it personally, and it really helped me.
Is he kind of like a second director?
Jack, you know, allowed him to collaborate in a way that made what's often opaque in the text and reading it very clear. But Tom also has a way of speaking that can make something that he's trying to clarify even more, because he'll add another layer that that's going on in his mind that you're like, please, I just need the logical progression. Please take me from, I don't need to know why that, you know, is affected by romanticism or not. You know, just please take me to the next step.
Well, of course, that's why the plays keep on changing. And when he was here, we talked about how no play he's ever done has been the same at the end of a run than it was when he finished it on the written page. You've also worked with him, Jennifer.
I have.
In The Real Thing on Broadway in the West End.
Yes, yes. I'm never so happy on stage as playing one of his women. They've been my four favorite parts that I've ever had the privilege to do.
What about you, Brian? Did they change the part a bit for this production, didn't they, your part?
I have no idea. Perhaps they did. I mean, we had...
Well, his name wasn't Herzen originally. No, that's a joke.
No, I thought you were being serious for a moment. The original script, we trimmed quite a bit, and he actually wrote extra material for this production as well, or different material for this production as well. So it's an evolving thing for Tom as well. I mean, he's currently in Moscow. There's a production in rehearsals, endless rehearsals, I believe, over there. I think they've got 16 or 17 months to put on the play over there. And he's constantly rewriting it. I mean, I think when they did it in London, he had the first two plays completed. While they started rehearsals, he wasn't finished the third play. So it is, and in this play, or in this production as well, we kind of ran out of time. The first play we had time, then we started to lose time. We were behind the eight ball a lot, and it seemed as if we can still work it. We're still working on it when we go into work every night. So something this huge, I don't think you could ever leave it aside.
Well, you're performing the first play while you were rehearsing the second play, mm-hmm. and then performing the second play while you were rehearsing the third play. Mm-hmm. And then at a certain point, they all wind up being performed in huge marathon performances.
It does feel like the paint is still wet on the third one, and it will be hard for it to dry, because by that time we only had about 2 weeks to rehearse.
We had 12 days to rehearse the third play.
And we were all, by that point, the accumulation of how tired we all were. And
well, of course, Billy gets a respite. He dies during the second play, so. Well,
I'm not giving anything away, but I was going to say, frankly, in the second play, I still feel like I'm learning stuff.
Yeah.
It's not just that there was a limited amount of time of rehearsal. It's that we're not performing it the way that you typically perform a play, which is eight shows a week. Which adds a certain kind of proficiency to the performance, but doesn't necessarily lead to, you know, giant leaps from one performance to the next. And the idea of doing the play every other day or every 5 days, or we've even had a week and a half off, I find that, you know, my imagination starts ticking after a while. I get a little restless, and so I'll start thinking about the speeches in a different way. And
then the other actors have to react to.
Oh yeah,
the way
everybody's
delivering
that's
those
the great
lines
thing. That's the great thing about this company is I think there's utter faith from every. I mean, yeah. Breen and I were doing the last scene that we have together in the first play maybe 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and it was after we had done the marathon, And Brian was informed by the marathon, the course of his entire character, in such a way that he brought something entirely new to this.
It probably worked for the first time.
And it was fantastic. And for me, I learned all sorts of new things about the text, and I was able to take that. So there's a great deal of confidence and generosity.
We all think of it as one play, the three parts of one play, which is very difficult for our process. It was like opening a regular play one act at a time. And obviously, until we have all three and actually playing them all on one day, when we did our first marathon, we went, oh, okay, we kind of see what the arc of this thing and what we need to do to make it alive.
Well, in your case, you're playing a character from his youthful, idealistic days to his wise old age.
Yeah.
Billy's character is pretty much within a fairly short range. And Jennifer, you're playing three different women in each play.
I
wonder which you think is the easiest.
Oh, God. Easiest. I don't know. They're all just... I love all three of them so much.
Would you have preferred to have played somebody from young to old over the course of these three plays?
No,
is it part of the fun that you're three very different
this
women?
This, for me, is just...
Jennifer refuses to age.
A dream.
Part of our contract.
I go from 17 to 35, according to the stage directions.
So you are playing older than your age.
Oh, yes, of course. For me, it's a dream come true to play these, to get to play all three of them at once. That was part of the fun and part of the attraction for me.
Another thing that makes this different than most stage productions is just how huge a cast it has. It almost feels like a movie rather than a play sometimes, since you've worked in both.
It's got such texture. I think the production, what Jack has done, has got such texture. And he's got together a group of actors, kind of like what Billy was saying, that we have sometimes 40 people on the stage, and you know that every single person on that stage, because we're all theater animals, every single person on that stage is doing it as if the audience is watching them, but without taking focus. Every moment is filled and specific and personal to that character
and Jack's,
or that actor.
It was Jack's clarity of vision too in the staging of it, I think, you know, that made it that dynamic, and also, you know, gave us that much trust in each other. This is the event that's happening now. This is what we can all do to help that. And you know your limitations, you know your role.
And each of the other actors in the company, this huge company, are understudying the other parts. So all our understudies are also on stage with us playing other parts. So everyone knows these plays very well. They are all also not only playing but also coming in for understudy rehearsals. And that really that is the backbone of the company, is that everyone knows these plays.
But what about the marathons, the three plays in a row? Do you spend the whole day in character? You become Herzen from the minute you show up to... The minute you're finished?
No. I mean, you know, we get in as like usually come in an hour and a half before the show and get
Do
ready.
You really?
Yeah. And we see, we never actually see
each other. I come in 2 hours and clean everybody's dressing room. It's just the kind of company member I am. Yeah, I don't want to take credit for it. This isn't being broadcast, is it?
it's a remarkable day. We all go and eat together in between both shows and all that. But the dynamic, if anybody hasn't seen these plays yet and are thinking about doing it and a bit worried about perhaps going after a marathon ticket, it is the most extraordinary event. And the people at the end, because the audience go through their own journey that is distinct from us, even forget about what's happening on the stage. And it is a remarkable moment at the end of the trilogy. At 11 o'clock at night, they've been there from 11 in the day. Everyone has committed to this piece. And it's dynamic.
It is very exciting.
When he was here in November, Tom Stoppard said, plays are partly a sequence of ambushes. does that make sense to you after having appeared in these?
It does. I think the way Jack has such an instinct for that too, for the orchestration of these plays and for what's called for dramatically, and why their detonations that Tom has laid in the pieces.
Are you going to take some time off after this is over?
Yes.
This must have been emotionally and physically tiring.
I get to take time off all the time. It's been such an Well, I actually saw part three for the first time last night, and it was absolutely spectacular, and I was quite jealous that I couldn't be a part of it in some way. So that was the first time I felt...
I'm sure we can get you in the background, Billy.
No, I wasn't that jealous.
Okay.
But
we do miss you.
Well, I miss you guys. But it's such a unique experience to be working and at home and only going to work like 3-4 times a week. It's kind of a dream job.
Well, the dream jobs are being filled by Billy Crudup, Jennifer Ely, and Brian F. O'Byrne, three of the stars of Tom Stoppard's epic trilogy, The Coast of Utopia, which will run through May 13th at Lincoln Center's Vivian Beaumont Theater. That's at 150 West 65th Street behind the Henry Moore. You can find out more by visiting lct.org or calling 212-239-6200. And it has been my great pleasure to talk with the three of you today.
Thank you
very much.